Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hi, welcome to Travel Advice Show. Hi, today's April 9th, 2007, and today's topic, we're going to be talking about Australia, all the travel advice about Australia down under. And my name's Chris Newton, I'm the co-host, and my other co-host, Jerry Fuller. How you doing, Jerry?
Very fine, how are you?
Hi, oh, great, great, yeah, I just want to say thank you to all the listeners out there who've been listening to all the shows weekly. We've been doing weekly shows since December now, and about all destinations around the world, from South America to Europe to Africa, some great adventures. And yeah, I just wanted to say thanks, Jerry, for creating a great show here. And today's topic is Australia, and you have a lot of familiarity to Australia, don't you, Jerry? Hello, Jerry. Hello. Hello.
Hello, it's Lynette.
Oh, hi, Lynette. Hi. Hi. This is Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts on the Travel Advice Show.
Oh, hello, Chris. I just called Jerry on the other line to say, am I supposed to call someone? Are they supposed to call me? He said, call this number now. So I did.
Oh, thank you so much. Welcome. Welcome to the show. And I'm going to patch Jerry in real quick, too. Yeah, it's a pleasure. I'll get Jerry here. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Hi, Lynette.
Hi.
Well, we have our special guest, Lynette Wilson, from Destination World, and I've known Lynette for, about 25 years, I guess, something like that, and she operates and owns one of the, in my opinion, the finest South Pacific tour company, because she's the one that does all of my trips, and we've asked her to be our guest, and Lynette, welcome. Hello.
Hello, Lynette. Thank you for inviting me on, Jerry. It's great to be here, and thanks for that praise. I just didn't know if you were talking about me then.
Well, I tell you, yeah. Lynette, the thing I like, but one of the major things I like about Lynette is that she knows Australia and the South Pacific, New Zealand and the islands so well that she can make your trip just phenomenal by getting ideas that you would never, ever, ever think about. So that's one of the reasons we wanted her on today, to talk about unique things, fascinating things, fun things to do in Australia today, because there's so much to do, we decided to put New Zealand and the other islands at another time. But Lynette, if you were going to Australia, when would you go?
Well, again, because of the size of the country, it depends on each person. Of course, has a different requirement, Jerry. It's like the United States, both being the same size. We've got our tropical areas, our dry areas, etc. If you went in June, July, August, it's going to be the winter season, which in some parts, if you want to ski, you can. Or you could go up to the Great Barrier Reef or Seven Spirit Bay in the far north. And again, it really depends. It's such a tricky question to answer because of the client's different requirements.
I know most people don't realize it. They think you can go to the Great Barrier Reef at any time and think it's like Hawaii, where the visibility would be fabulous, but that's not true, is it?
No, because you could have cyclone season, which sweeps right across the top of Australia through New Guinea, Indonesia, and top part of Northern Territory in Queensland, and say January, February period. And you've got to expect a lot of high humidity and possible heavy rainfall, whereas in the other parts of the country, it's absolutely stunning. The weather has been a bit peculiar over the last 3 years, so it's hard to pinpoint exact dates like we used to in the good old days.
Oh, I know it. And tell me about, if you were going to Australia your first time, how long would you stay, and what would be some of the unique or interesting things that people should not miss their first visit?
Well, there's, I would say, a minimum of 2 weeks in Australia. A lot of people have called up and they want to do stopovers on the way down and squeeze in too many countries, and it becomes one big blur. It's impossible to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The icons are popular in Australia being, you know, going to Sydney for the Sydney Opera House and the bridges, the usual things, going up to the Great Barrier Reef for the reef and rainforest experience. And, you know, the first time, is it's like anything else, they want to see the major icons, you know, as I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Depending on the time of the year, some people have an interest in the outback and want to go and see Ayers Rock, etc. But again, it's time, it's also the finances, etc. Usually the off-the-wall itineraries come in with a revisit to the country where they're looking for something different. They've already been there, done that on the norm, and want mm-hmm. something like, here's a black and white, can you color it in? And that's what I like to sink my teeth into.
Mm. And that's really Lynette's, well, she can do anything you want down there practically, but her real specialty, as I've discovered, I know she can even get you to go down in cages, see the shark, and stay on ranches out in the middle of nowhere and stations out there, and recommend fabulous places like Cradle Mountain and the different. But I remember one time we were talking about some people going, and they went to the Telegraph Trail up in near Cape York area,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
northern Queensland.
Again, depending on how adventurous someone, you know, how adventurous someone is, if they want to go off on their own or with a small group, or if they want to go in perhaps 20 people in the age groups that suit them, things can be come up still unusual. For example, if someone's into a camping trip, you know, you can sleep with a camel, which sounds a bit unusual, but it's like a trip out of Alice Springs with on a camel trail, and then you know, you just pitch a tent and get to see a bit of the outback that way. One unusual one, which is relatively new to a lot of people, is in Coober Pedy, which is in South Australia. Coober Pedy is an Aboriginal word meaning white man's hole in the ground. And
uh-huh.
the reason for that is, as you know, Jerry, the very, very high temperatures in the summertime, when the miners were mining the opals out there, they discovered how much cooler
right.
it was underneath the ground. Well, there's almost like a city underground with hair salons and banks and everything else. But for camping, you can even have a campsite underground, which sounds a bit unusual.
Oh, wow.
Most people wait to be, you know, dead to be buried underground. But this is about four kilometers out of town. It's really for the adventurous.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they just put their swag or their camping bag out. There's bunk beds, internet access underground.
Wow.
Don't ask me how they do this. And you can actually go mining, and while you're there, you know, sleep under the stars or underground at the same time. So that's one, you know, unusual accommodation. And then there's some other people that say, well, you know, I want to go to, should find me something different to stay at in each place I'm going to. So we discovered that there's some lighthouses that they actually shut down the actual working of the lighthouse in the 1990s, but the buildings are still there, and they've been converted into bed and breakfast or self-contained accommodation, etc.
Huh.
The visitors can't go up into the tower itself, but they can just, you know, stay in the actual lighthouse keepers' cottages.
Mm-hmm.
They're a bit more remote than the mainstream, so if you don't have to have a lot of company, because
uh-huh.
you don't expect to have a lighthouse in the middle of a main street. And what other accommodation is there? The fire.
Well, I know you can stay at universities sometimes.
Say again?
I know you can stay at universities sometimes.
Yeah, that's the most inexpensive way. And cause a lot of single travelers have always had the problem of being lumbered with a single room supplement in hotels everywhere they're going, and it really takes the bite out of their budget.
Mm-hmm.
So by staying at the universities, now that's not year-round. It has to be when
right.
you know, the universities are out on their break, and that,
right.
that can, you know, vary from university to university. I think it's like July period and December through March, which is really a good time to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you probably find there's one in Brisbane, for example, that's about $40 to $50 a night Australian and includes three meals. And that's
wow.
a single room. Yeah,
whoa,
really
three
good.
Meals, too.
Really good. And then there's others that might be just room only, you know, which would be even cheaper. But again, you have to get in early because the word's getting out about it. And, but it's brilliant for someone who wants to get around because the colleges are in really good parts of the city.
Right.
And then you just jump on some local transportation and get out and have a look around and see what else there is. So that's...
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry, Lynette.
No, go ahead.
Well, one thing that I think is interesting about Lynette and her company is that even if you go to normal places in Australia, like to Sydney and to Melbourne, they can recommend you fun things to do. And I know you mentioned to me a while back about the Melbourne jail trip tour.
Oh, yeah, I'm smiling on that one. You can go during the day, but I suggest to people that they go at night because they have a special night performance. I think it's like on Fridays and Saturdays, if I remember
mm-hmm.
correctly. It's more of a theatrical interpretation. And it talks about, like, Ned Kelly, who was Australia's version of Robin Hood, who actually got hung at that particular jail. And it's almost like a ghost story, but it's really fantastic. But they don't want little tiny kids to go because it can be a bit scary. So they usually ask for 12 and above for the evening performances. But it's just something different to do, and you get a little bit of Australia's history as well as having quite an entertaining evening. So it's just a twist on the norm that you can you can get when you're going out there. And again, a lot of people ask about, you know, what to do at night when you're out in the bush, and so we suggest if they're doing that they wrap the accommodation around where they're going. And what I mean by that, for example, there's a couple of places that pop to mind. Do you remember Undara, Jerry, about the lava chute just out of appearance? And they discovered...
Most people think Hawaii is the only place in the world that, you know, the big island of Hawaii is the only place that has lava chutes.
But
that's not true.
Exactly. And the thing is, when they discover these lava tubes, which is a bit of a drive out of Cairns, it's like, well, what kind of accommodation? We can pitch up a few tents. So someone had the bright idea of pulling in some old railroad carriages. It's not a train line there. They just all of a sudden you see these railroad carriages that have been converted into accommodation. Uh-huh. And so you get to see the lava tubes. You know, you can drive a double-decker bus. They're huge going through there with a Savannah guide. And then at night you can sit around the campfires and hear all these old stories and legends and, you know, what Australians are like after a couple of drinks. I'll exaggerate a bit. Speaking of, you know, being out in the bush with the locals, one of the fun things that people have been talking about more and more, I'm surprised how many people keep wanting to go back and do the same thing again, is the pub crawl on horseback. That's non-drinkers can go too. It's not a compulsory thing. But what they mean by that, it's the old public houses, the public inns in the bush. So it's not just necessarily a bar. It's where they have accommodation, but it might be very simple ones. But it is out in the middle of this stunning scenery. And you just go from one end to another. There might be a gymkhana or a rodeo on in one place. It could be sheep shearing on in another. So you're getting to mix with all the colourful characters, you know, typical Aussies, the shearers, the graziers, stockmen, all that type of thing, and the stories they can tell.
I know. But, you know, one of the things that I find interesting and I like to explore, and Lynette, why don't you tell them about the, everybody goes to Sydney and they always go to Manly Beach and to Bondi, but tell us about that other one that you find fabulous up in the northern part of Sydney.
Fabulous views. At Pittwater Palm Beach area, right on the northern point of Sydney, and you can just catch a bus from the central station to get out there, and right at the end, here I go with my lighthouses again, but there's a lighthouse right on the headland at Palm Beach, so you can walk up there and have a look. It takes a while, you know, be prepared for about a 40-50 minute walk, and it has the most stunning views of Sydney. It really looks, like I've been saying, like the Greek islands, but it's just incredible. I mean, there's views that you'll see because most people want to do this, you know, Sydney Bridge climb and the point and all that type of thing, but this part is a different angle. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's a nice walk out there. I usually suggest people grab a picnic or stop by, you know, a couple of places on the way back and have some fish and chips. And in the right time of the year, you can watch the surf lifesavers do their thing. In fact, this year it's the bicentenary for the Surf Life Saving Association of Australia too. So there's all different competitions and things like that going on, which is really, really good. But there's so much in the country to see, so it's hard when people say, I want to see all of Australia in 2 weeks, et cetera, because it's impossible. You just can't.
Right. Well, I've lived in Australia 3.5 years, and I've been there about 25 times, and there's still many things in Australia I've not done yet. And it's just amazing. Now, I want to spend a little time in Tasmania, which, if I had to say, my favorite part of Australia is Tasmania. I lived in Tassie for 9 months, and I've been there probably 15 times. But do you want to tell us some of the neat things that you recommend when people want to go to Tasmania?
Well, it's fascinating. It's got all the colours of the rainbow in the one little state. It's got the historical part, obviously, with the penal colony in Port Arthur. It's a lot of the people, as soon as they hear that I'm from Australia, say, well, we're your ancestors' convicts, but I have the German winemakers, so I have a different vice to worry about. But again, about it, Port Arthur, it's fascinating for the history of the country. Hobart itself is the main city that most people fly into if they don't into Launceston on the other side of the state. But in Hobart, say on a Saturday, going to the Salamanca markets, it's mixing in with the locals where you know, all these outside eateries and knickknacks, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's just a buzz. Going out into the countryside, Cradle Mountain, Freycinet is just incredible, mm-hmm. and the walks there are spectacular.
I know it.
I remember at Cradle Mountain, it's interesting that just next to the restaurant at the end, there's this, a glass partition, and on the other side is where the kitchen throw their scraps out, and all the wild animals just come in from the bush and just eat and then leave. It's almost like dinner reservations for them.
It's like going to Kenya, isn't it, out at Tiger Top or something. I mean, treetop.
Exactly like that. But you're just so close to them, and they're not in a caged area at all. That's just the way that they are. Fascinating stuff. And the colors are so vivid. You really have to take, more film than you're expected to use.
I want you to spend a little bit of time at that, what is that fabulous park up there?
Freycinet? Which one?
How can I be blank? I've only been there 10 times. Up there where the, it's up the north part, south of Davenport, west of Davenport. Everybody, it's fabulous. For the natural reserves and the lodges and, not Cradle Mountain, it's called, is it Cradle Mountain?
You're thinking of Cradle Mountain out of Davenport?
Yes.
On the way through, yes. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah,
because I'm thinking, is there another one?
No, I was thinking, what's the name of the mountain right out of Hobart? That 4,000-foot mountain.
Mount Wellington.
Mount Wellington, that's it.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Wellington because we were talking about Hobart, but that's where I went blank. But tell us about Cradle Mountain.
It's just pretty. It's like picture postcards. Every picture you take on it, people ask if they've touched up the coloring, et cetera. If someone is into art or photography, that's the place to go to. Whilst there are some coach tours around the area, I think the best way of exploring it is in your own rental car. Now, you are driving on the other side of the road, but there's not a lot of traffic to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that in most parts of Australia, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way of going, and so just fly into the country, get a rental car for about 4 or 5 days, drive around, and you can see a lot in 4 or 5 days. And mm-hmm. you can see where I'm coming. We just covered nearly a week, and if someone's only got 2 weeks in Australia, you can see how quickly the time can go.
But
if you just want 2 nights in each city, that's like, you may as well shoot yourself in the foot, because you cannot get to see it all.
I know. You need a minimum of 1 week minimum in Tasmania,
mm-hmm.
minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And because you need to go out to Queenstown and Strawn on the west coast where a lot of the mining towns are.
It's beautiful.
And you go to Russell Falls and along
just
the beaches
whole,
between St. Mary.
Circle of the place. And if you're still into the ghost stories, go out at Port Arthur Penal Colony and listen to the stories there where you're outside under the stars and they've got the old lanterns and scare the hell out of you.
I know. But the one thing, I'll never forget the first time I went to Port Arthur. Mm-hmm. They had that little museum, and they have the actual ship captain logs.
Yes.
And it will say, for example, John Doe, P-O-M-E, Pommy, mm-hmm. prisoner of Mother England.
Mm-hmm.
And it will say, stole an apple and sentenced for 2 years.
Yep, I know.
Down there. And it's the first time that Oliver Twist actually came alive to me. That book, I said, my word, that book is true.
Just like
that. And, it's... And do you know down at Port Arthur, have you ever been to the Barking Sand Beach down at Port Arthur?
Oh, Godfather, I was a mere child at the time, and you're giving it away now. But it's fantastic. They've still got the trips going out there into, I think it's called Shark Bay or Shark Beach, just across from there as well.
Right.
Yep. And they know that they're still in operation now.
I have a video of me jumping up and down. As you hit the sand with your feet. It's one of the very few places in the world that you can do that.
Just remember. One thing that's really interesting, and it's just if you're collecting trivia, is Tasmania is known as the Apple Isle because of all the apples that are growing over there.
Port Huron.
And correct. And New York is the Big Apple, and New York to the equator is exactly to the mile the same distance that Hobart is from the equator on the other side. Just something about that's interesting. And what else is Hobart? No, Tasmania is famous for Errol Flynn, and he got expelled from Hobart High School for smearing syrup on the headmaster's steering wheel of his car. So can't take us very far, can you? But it's just something about being in Australia and the Australians welcome overseas visitors, and they love Americans, love to talk about, you know, about the various country. We try and steer away from politics for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is when people go over there, rather than just necessarily, you know, buying every tour that they can get to fill up every day on their calendar, to take some time off to blend in and mix in with the locals, go to a local football game and hang out with the locals, or even if you're walking along, say, Sydney Harbour and there's a few yachties that are going out for the day, then you have to hear your accent and I'll invite you aboard or just take a six-pack with you and jump on and go for an afternoon sail.
Right. That sounds brilliant, yeah.
Because they will welcome you with open arms for it. I mean, I don't mean knock on a total stranger's door, like get a bit of an odd look.
Right.
But uh-huh. on the day-to-day running of the way people are, they just want to share spirit.
It's a fabulous place. Now, I want, before the show's over, I want to spend a little bit of time on transportation, because a lot of people don't realize, I mean, they know it's as big as the United States practically, but they don't really realize how big it is. What do you think about the train, traveling by train or the local, not local, but like the equivalent of the Greyhound bus, or versus car rental or flying? What do you recommend?
All right, depending on what part of the country you're going in. For example, if you're in Adelaide, where I'm from, which would be like Austin, Texas, it's the mm-hmm. capital of South Australia, and I wanted to go to Alice Springs or Darwin, I wouldn't drive a car there because you are going straight into the desert, and unless you're really used to that, in case you break down, you're pretty much up the creek. So
right.
for that one, I would suggest that people take the GAN train, which is on the same route that the Afghan camel trains used to be when they were back in those days. Mm-hmm. And it used to be only to Alice Springs and back, but now they've extended it up to Darwin. It's a fabulous trip if you can go on that. Again, you need the time to do it because it's about 24 hours just to get to Alice.
Right. So would we be talking about 50 hours, 60 hours to Darwin?
Yeah, it would be. It would be that. Quite right. So it's a bit of a hike.
The trains are very nice.
It's fantastic when you stop off at some of the stations. They'll take you off to you know, to see some of the sites, going to the Flying School of the Air or the Flying Doctor Service, etc. in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fantastic, and we can make some other suggestions for you too if you want something a little bit more off the wall. But I'm not going to give all the secrets away in one conversation. Other parts of the country, you can rent a car or jump on local transportation.
Uh-huh.
So again, it comes back to depending on where you're going and the time frame. You don't have to spend your whole trip in the air. Although if it's on a very short duration that you're in the country, that may be a necessity more so than
right.
anything else. Some people enjoy the train from Adelaide to Perth. It's not my favorite. I think it's too long looking at the desert. But, you know, again, depends. Some people
it has the longest straight stretch of train track in the world. It takes a lifetime to do it.
Yeah.
And I've done it twice. But I agree with you. I don't recommend it at all unless you really love trains.
Or you want to read more.
It's boring as sin. All you see is this bush.
It's not
4 days.
Well, there's a road there as well, and really the road is so straight you could put a brick on the accelerator pedal and fall asleep in the back seat for 3 days. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. But,
you know, that's just an nullable plane in the deserts, and so be it. In fact, we tease people from Western Australia. We call them sand gropers because to get to the nearest city, Adelaide, where I am, you have to grope across the desert for goodness knows how many days. Exactly. But it's a fun thing, and also because of the size of the country, because the population of Australia can fit into Los Angeles. So we've got all these people mainly spread around the edges like gravy on a plate.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the stations are so large that they have helicopters to round up the cattle.
Yeah.
And some kids learn how to fly a small plane before they know how to drive a car.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. But it's fascinating to see it. Well, to go out and hang out with the Aborigines for a while and learn their way of life, you've got to be pretty tough and hardy and prepared to eat very weird and wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's depending on how adventurous do you want. Some people have said to me, oh, look, I love the idea of going out bushing and camping and mixing in with the locals. then you talk to them a bit longer and you find out they've never been camping before. So I suggest to people then that before they make the reservation that night, not to sleep on their bed, but to sleep on their floor in their living room, and the next day they call and say, it's okay, I think I'll have a hotel. So it just depends. If you can't sleep on your own floor, carpeted floor in your own bedroom, forget about sleeping out in the bush. You know, the idea is wonderful, but not necessarily when it comes into practice.
Now, there are some areas of... tell us about the Great Barrier Reef. How would you recommend a first-time visitor to see it? Where would they go, which island, or would they go by boat, or what would you recommend?
Oh, good one. Okay. If someone's a scuba diver, my answer would be different than a non-diver, all right? For the reasons of being, if the scuba diver wants to see as much as the underwater life, then they should be on a liveaboard boat and getting right out of it rather than coming backwards and forwards every day.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the actual resorts are concerned, there's actually two island resorts that are right on the reef. And when I'm saying that, I mean you can just walk off the beach into the water with your snorkeling equipment on and go snorkeling straight away. One would be in the far north Lizard Island, which is very ultra deluxe, and the other one would be in the further south of the Great Barrier Reef called Heron Island, which covers more of a broad stream of clients. In between, there's a lot of island resorts, but in order to go snorkeling, you've got to get on a boat and go out for an hour or so to get to the actual reef. So again, it depends on what you're looking for.
I know, and most people don't realize that if you go to some of those islands that are famous, you've got to go for an hour or 2 hours just to get to the reef.
Right. So
they're very disappointed.
Yep. So it's a trade-off. I mean, there's some stunning resorts there that if people say, well, look, I just want to go snorkeling for a day, I don't want to go every day, then that's fine. But again, we have to find out and ask very detailed, almost like an interrogation more than an interview, to find out, will you be snorkeling every day? No, you won't find, then you might like this one versus the other one and save yourselves a few $100 a night.
Right.
So we might sound like we're asking a lot of questions when people are calling, but there's a method in our madness because we're trying to match as closely as we can those requirements.
Before we go, I want you to give your phone number so that people can make reservations.
Then
you want them to call you directly?
Or they can email, whichever is easier, or on our website.
All right.
Their website is destinationworld.com. And there's the various telephone numbers are on the site. That might be the easiest way, I think.
All right. Thank you for nothing. Now, I want to ask one question more about the Great Barrier. Do you recommend taking that boat ride between Cairns and Townsville?
There's a couple. The Coral Princess is quite good. I like that for families because it gives the kids something to do as well as the adults. They stop it. A lot of the islands are not the high-rise resort islands. Some of them are uninhabited where they go ashore with marine biologists.
Right.
It's like a four-day, three-night, which is quite interesting, quite a good concept, and we've sold quite a bit of that. Again, it depends on the amount of time that they have, so they could perhaps spend a few nights in Sydney, shoot up to Cairns to do the rainforest, you know, Cape Tribulation and Daintree Rainforest, which is fascinating, and then... jump on the Coral Princess and go four days, three nights southbound to Townsville, seeing all of the reef, and then they can shoot home or stop over.
Now, we have about 2 minutes, literally, and I want you to spend some time in the Arnhem Land and the Kakadu and all that area up north.
In only 2 minutes, my goodness.
I know.
I'm going to have to speak extremely fast. Again, that region is so diverse. I mean, Kakadu was put on the map in the U.S. market after Crocodile Dundee did his filmed in the park itself. But it branches off into so many different areas, and there's so much Aboriginal artifacts. And wildlife as well. You have to be careful on the time of the year that you go there. It's pretty much like Africa in so much as if it's straight after the rains, the animals are going to have enough water spread out. They won't be gathered around the watering holes. So I would prefer people to go in the drier time when they have a better chance of seeing them all grouped together around the smaller allocations of water.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people don't realize you can take private flying charter tours. Hit a whole lot of areas in just hours, literally, and do a wonderful time.
One of my favorite areas, just out of that area, and you still have to start in Darwin, would be to get out to Seven Spirit Bay.
Oh, yes.
And it's again, it's a private plane to get you out there, and you need to spend at least, two or three nights there, and there's so many things to do. It only, I think, from memory, it's only about 12 guests there with 20 people looking after you, but it's very hands-on, and that you get to see so much more in a concentrated amount of time. It's one thing worthwhile. But there are many four-wheel drive operators as well where you can have very upscale camping safaris. You can have middle of the road. There's the coach tours where you can go to, places like the Crocodile Hotel, which is shaped like a crocodile to get in, which is a bit touristy, but, works for some. It just, again, it depends on what someone wants. So if we've got someone's wish list, even if it's a black and white wish list, we can colour it in to suit exactly what they're looking for. I can't guarantee they're going to have, George Clooney travelling with them, but, I'll get as close as I can.
Well, Lynette, our time is up.
Goes quickly, doesn't it?
Yes, and we hope to have you back when we just do New Zealand.
I'd love to.
And then we'll talk about the island at another time. But, yeah, Lynette at destinationworld.com, and please give them a contact because, as you can see, their company is the company that we use, the travel advice, and everyone that we recommend because it's fabulous. Well, thanks again, Lynette.
Thank you very much. Hope to see you guys again.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, I appreciate that, Lynette. It was a great show, and looking forward to having you on again. Yeah.
Okay. And maybe we'll see you in Australia.
Next week. Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Come on down and say g'day.
Oh, I'd love to.
All right, thank you. Okay.
So, Chris, what are we going to do next week, Chris?
We're talking about the CIS countries there, Russia, in that area, like Central Asia area there. And, so that's going to be a great great show. And, tune in next Monday. And these are live shows, and you can listen on our website, www.traveladviceshow.com, and has all the archives of all our shows that we have, and it was a pleasure. It was great to have Lynette on the show today.
All right. Well, we'll see you all next week then.
Oh, okay, Jerry. Sounds good, and see you next week. Okay.
All righty.
Okay, bye-bye.